The summer break is over and we are back. Yes, the world's longest running football fans podcast is back for season number 14. If you ever wanted to know how difficult it is to organise a football fans podcast and get a few guests on it, so we have the season end review of the 2018-2019 season with myself, Sean Huddleston, Stephen Ray and Duncan Smiley on it. It was also supposed to have Kevin Schofield, Lawrence Donegan and St Anthony and Lackey Moore on it, and hopefully Hullboy. Unfortunately, Hullboy couldn't make it, St Anthony couldn't make it, Lawrence had a golfing engagement forgotten about, and Kevin Schofield had some political scandal to deal with. They're 10 a penny. You'd have thought he could have given it a miss. But anyway, that all happened 2 hours before the podcast started. So, that doesn't spoil the fun. You've got myself and three great guests reviewing from the Open Top Bus Tour as season 2017-18 finished, and the double treble, the unique, as we thought, double treble happened through the summer transfer window, into the spat with Brendan and the board, through the season, Brendan's departure, Neil Lennon's appointment, and the fantastic treble. So enough of me. Let's review how last season went before this season starts. It's season 14 of the world's longest running football fans podcast. So the original plan for this podcast was to have 7 people on it. But in the 2 hours and the run-up to it, I've had a few cancellations. So I'm joined by... I'm not going to say whether it's been good or bad cancellations, by the way. So I've been joined by Sean Huddleston, Duncan Smiley and Stephen Ray. How are you guys doing?
We're all good.
Doing very, very well, sir.
Excellent. So we are here to review the eventful 2018-19 season, which started off, we'd had a open top bus parade up to Celtic Park to celebrate the double treble. That's how the previous season had finished, and the season finished with a open top bus parade that couldn't actually go anywhere because of the crowds as we celebrated a treble, but it was pretty eventful in between. So I'll start off with the transfer window. So Sean, we finished with a double treble and we started the transfer window with a bang with the £9 million acquisition of Hudson Edward. So how did you think the summer transfer window was going to go, and how did it actually go?
I think like a lot of people, we expected a lot and very little got delivered, didn't it? I'm just looking over who we actually signed in the summer. We obviously got Edward, but that was a continuation of somebody we had got on loan. So, that was really just the consolidating what we had with that player. I was very happy that he signed. He's proved himself this season to actually be the big game player that we needed. But Jesus, when I look at the list of, it really doesn't matter. Malumbu, oh God. But Begovic was actually quite a good signing. He's suffered from injuries quite a bit. Poor Daniel Arzani, he crocked himself in his first game, didn't he?
He did.
And
7 minutes, I think it was.
Izaguirre was welcome, but it was pretty uninspired, if I could say that. I think like a lot of other fans, I was really worried that once again, Celtic throughout its history has never built upon its strength. It's never taken, the next step, if you want to put it like that. I was really worried that this transfer window was a continuation of that, if that makes sense.
Well, Stephen, for me it was a bit odd because, as we say, we started off with a bang with the €9 million on the transfermarket.com, the €9.27 million acquisition of Odson Edward. And
sorry, Harry, if I can interject, was it $9 million in total that we signed Edward for, or was that part of a package?
No, it was $9 million in total.
Yeah, right.
Which at the time I didn't believe that we would actually spend $9 million in one go. But the fact that we've now been prepared to, you know, in three signings this summer, we've already spent $10 million.
Yeah.
Makes me now, with hindsight, look back and think, yeah, probably. I mean, I'm sure it was like all major transfers that are done at the top level. You don't pay $9 million up front. If it's a 4-year deal, you probably pay something like half of it up front, and then you pay it in installments. I think that's pretty much the way these things go. But yeah, it was $9 million, and Stephen.
Yeah, sorry for interrupting.
That's all right. At the beginning of the summer transfer window as well, Brendan was very much talking about one-off Kieran Tierney. It sounds a bit like this summer. One of Kieran Tierney and Moussa Dembele would probably be going. And you just thought, right, okay, so one of them will go and we'll have another $20 million to spend on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as Sean says, it was... for me, the transfer window was summed up by the couple of signings at the end with Malumbu and Izaguirre. What did you think of it, Stephen?
It was good. Obviously, it felt like we were ready to build on the success. Obviously, I was at the big parade at Celtic Park after the cup final, right at the front, and was it a couple of weeks later, like you said, $9 million into Edward, and you think, right, we're actually going to kick on now. It's like, you know, third season that Rodgers is here and we're going to push for Europe, and that's going to be this our main focus. But it all seemed to turn on its head very quickly, and I think it all sort of came out in the wash several months later with the whole Rodgers to China thing, and it was almost as if the club were willing to back him, and then the minute he looked as if he may be willing to go, they just decided, nah, we're not investing big money into any players, and we've got enough to go by, you know, we've got enough to get on with for next season, so, you know, why spend all this money on a manager who clearly wants to go? It's kind of, it didn't feel, it wasn't, you weren't sure at the time, you just felt as if, you know, obviously the board get a lot of blame, Orwell gets a lot of blame for getting involved in transfers and stuff, and you just don't know if, at the time you felt there was maybe a falling out, and there was one wanted to spend the money, one didn't want to spend the money or didn't think it was worth it. It was hard to get your head around at the time. And I think we always knew that Dembele was going to attract a transfer. But we started that Alice Cart game with a 3-5-2, two up front, Edward and Dembele, and you just thought, yes, is this the way we're going to go? It looked really good. And then it all fell apart really quickly. And like you're saying about Malumbu and Izaguirre, those signings in the end just summed up the whole shambles. The John McGinn thing, I don't think was totally Celtic's fault. I think Hibs were playing hardball until the English window shut, which was the 8th of August. And luckily for Villa, they got some backers in just before that window shut and managed to steal that player. I'm not a big John McGinn fan, but end of the day, if the manager wanted him, then you've got to go and get him, especially the small fee that he was going for. So, yeah, it was started well and finished in a bit of a shambles, to be honest.
Well, Duncan, Stephen mentions the McGinn transfer. That really seemed to be the start of almost a public spat that was taking place between the board and the manager around the time of the Champions League qualifiers. I had some heated debates with people on Twitter about it. I thought it was unbecoming of everybody that we were having these public arguments. It didn't bode well for the Champions League campaign, did it?
No, it didn't. And I think very un-Celtic for me. And at the time, I wasn't that disappointed we didn't get McGinn. Although with hindsight, he is looking to turn into an actual smashing player. And that might be actually why we seem to go all out to get that boy from Motherwell in the close season, albeit that it fell through. But yeah, it was a strange transfer window for me, because again, like you said, Brian, for us to spend £9 million on Edward, I really was surprised that we shelled out that amount of money for him. And we seem to start well again, and hopefully it's not going to be the same this transfer window, but we started really well by investing in him, and I think he is a quality player. He's a big time player, but I guess with hindsight, and I guess hindsight's never around when you need it, but when you look now, it was the beginning of the end for the club and Brendan Rodgers, in my opinion, and they clearly didn't want to go all in on him with a transfer window, knowing that he was going to leave, and they probably thought he was going to leave at the end of the season, and not actually when he did. But yeah, it was a disappointing window for me, and the whole way the McGinn thing was handled, and even the Boyata thing, and for me he should have been gone. That would have been money in the bank. There was no point, and that's not hindsight, I'd have said at the time that we should have let Boyata go for whatever we were getting off for, 5, 6, 8, 9 million pounds it was reported. We should have let him go at the time, and it was all very, it was a wee bit scabby and a wee bit very un-Celtic, and I was almost glad when the window was over, and a bit underwhelmed at a love visit a bit, like I'm sure we all do, and I was pleased at Benkovic, because from what little I had seen of him, he seemed like a proper player. So quite a strange window, and it's such a crucial time in the Champions League qualifiers. It was it was a wee bit cringing.
And that's one of the things that people talk about, you know, the club backing a manager. And, you know, sometimes you can back a manager by not selling a player. You know, as you say, Duncan, we should have sold them Boyata. The alleged bids that were in were 8-9 million quid, so I'm sure we could have pushed it up to 10. So, you know, we didn't take a £10 million bid for a centre-half. And but the consequence of that was Boyata went in a huff and didn't play the AEK Athens game.
Yeah, I know, and I think that for me, that was an absolute sign of Brendan Rodgers showing his teeth or flexing his muscles to say, you will not sell this player for under me. I think that was a, again, looking back with hindsight, that's to me how that appears to be. But I think it's very short-sighted, because £10 million gets us a good quality player. So, yeah, we certainly didn't get a shift out of him. For the rest of the time that he was here this season, that's for sure.
The thing, Sean, that got me though was we knew in October that Boyata's contract was up the following season, and the reason I mention it in October of the preceding season, because I can remember something coming out in the press around about October, November time that Celtic had tried to speak to Boyata's agent, and he wanted to see how his player got on at the World Cup. So we knew that Boyata was going to a World Cup. He was playing for Belgium, who, you know, and they ended up getting the last four. So we knew we had a player that he was going in the final year of his contract, but we could get a few bob for. And also, every single Celtic fan knew that Moussa Dembele had only come to Celtic to go somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing that struck me about the transfer window was, one, we have a player who's coming to the end of his contract in Boyata. He's only got a year left, so normally there's a notional value to a player with a year left in his contract. His agent doesn't speak to the club at all, yet when a £8-9 million offer comes in, I'm sure we could push up to 10, so when a £10 million offer comes in, we don't take it. And when a £20 million offer comes in for Dembele in the final week of the transfer window, oh, it's not enough time for us to get a replacement. The whole thing just seemed a shambles.
I'm trying to think back to that time, Harry, and I remember things turning upside down really quickly. You know, I don't know if the rest of the lads feel the same way about it, because up until the summer of the double treble, it seemed as if we were putting in continuity plans. We were intensifying and reorganizing our recruitment policy, and obviously I'm an outsider looking in. I thought that we had guys lined up for people that we were going to sell, like Dembele, you know, like various others, like Boyata. So it made me think, you know, why weren't these plans being put into place, you know? Second of all, you know, it also, you know, again, as Duncan's bringing up, hindsight's a wonderful thing here. Who was pulling the strings here? Who was actually calling the main shots here? Who was arguing the most that, you know, we needed to sell Dembele or should let go of Dembele at that time, and, you know, why we should keep Boyata? My own feeling at the time was, as Doug was saying, yeah, sell him, God almighty, it's not as if we didn't have cover there either, you know? We had Begovic lined up, we had Ayer, we had Simunovic. You know, it's not as if we didn't have anybody to cover it.
Jack Henry.
Well, you know what, here's another thing as well. Poor old Jack Henry's been held out to dry, hasn't he? Or hung out to dry. It's very unfortunate with that guy. And I think it's also been testament to one of Brendan Rodgers' other management foibles, is that he's allowed players to be hung out to dry. Like Mikey Johnson at Ibrox playing up front on his own twice was inexplicable, but that's a different matter. But yeah, coming back to that, it went from a summer where we seemed to be quite organised, quite ready, very well resourced, to a fortnight period where all hell was breaking loose. Players were going on strike, players were refusing to train, the manager and the board were up at arms against each other in some sort of power struggle. And as Duncan was saying, it was very unedifying. And it left a bad taste in the mouth all around, really, didn't it? You know?
It did, and this was a key time around the Champions League qualifiers. And for me...
As yourself and Mark Cooper have routinely emphasised, is that getting to the Champions League is what keeps us streets ahead of everybody else. Yeah, that is our main priority.
Yeah,
if you want to put it like that. Certainly in terms of, well, certainly financial, a financial perspective. And to go into the AEK Athens game as disorganized and as disunited was completely shambolic, and again it left a bad taste in the mouth, you know.
Well, I felt I don't know about you guys, don't know about you, Stephen. I felt that the manager was in the pre-game interviews. Both I remember sitting in the car, just about to leave the car to walk up to the game at home against Rosenborg, and especially at home against AEK Athens, and listening to the interview of Brendan Rodgers, and it really was having a real kicking at the board stuff. He wasn't expecting to get through it. He was getting his retaliation in first and making sure that everybody knew if we didn't go through, it wouldn't be his fault.
I vaguely remember the interview. I had the earphones in walking to the game. I think it was before AEK Athens. Yeah, it felt like he was making these excuses because he wasn't 100% sure that this team would get through that tie. Now, while you were talking, I'm sitting calculating in my head the bids that came in. And obviously, people would say Rodgers would leave because he wouldn't have the kind of funds to take Celtic to the next level. But when you take Dembele at 20 million, there or thereabouts, Armstrong for 7 or 8 million, the bid for Ncham at 13.5, 14 million, and 8, 9 million for Boyata, that's somewhere in the region of £50 million. And what you and Mark talk about teams at our level, the Benficas or the Portos and these type of teams, they will always sell. Doesn't matter, they'll always sell their crown jewels, but what they are really good at is having the next guy ready to walk in for a third or half the price that they've just sold the previous guy for. And if Celtic had a bit about them, those players could have been sold and a whole new team could have been brought in through that summer. But it just seemed like you said, the manager and the Peter Lawwell weren't on the same page when it came to players and maybe their valuations or the type of players that we were going after. And like you're saying, that interview prior to the Athens game, it was definitely getting these excuses in and pointing fingers elsewhere, and people were backing the manager and pointing the fingers at Peter Lawwell. But it was a bit weird because we just spent $9 million on a player that Rodgers wanted. So, you know, it's easy to answer now because you know the answers. But back then, you were kind of torn by what was actually really happening at the club. It was a bit frustrating.
At the time, I remember making this point, Duncan, and of course, I loved Brendan Rodgers. I remember actually saying, there's nothing would want me to have Brendan Rodgers leave Celtic. But at the same time, when everybody was criticising the January transfer window before, the manager had, in terms of giving us the freedom to sell Boyata, the manager had signed two centre-halves of his choosing, scouted by his guy, and Marvin Compeer and Hendry. So we signed two centre-halves. We knew Boyata would probably be leaving because he wasn't signing a new contract. We knew Boyata would probably be leaving, and we signed two centre-halves. So there is an argument that it wasn't the club's fault that the two centre-halves were shite.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I'm a big fan of Brendan Rodgers. I still am, actually. I'm not going to hide that. I really liked him, and I just loved him, what he'd done at Celtic. Very disappointed when they left, and I've heard a lot of people say, "Well, his biggest problem was he never bought well at Celtic." And I know that he did buy a lot of duds, but he did buy a couple of good players as well. He did buy Dembele, and he did buy Sinclair. There's other players that he bought that are good players. And he got the best out of it, but it was just, I remember the interview you're talking about for the AEK Athens game, and for Brendan, somebody that's so big on the psychology of managing people and motivation, I'd really like to know what that was, because that more or less gave the guys a free hand to say, I don't think he's going to win this game, I don't think he's good enough to win it, I don't think we've got the right players. I don't know, it's maybe pop psychology to say what he's trying to do is reverse psychology, but the whole thing was it was bad, and I know we're going to go on the season, but there's still a real hangover into the season as well, because we started the league season appallingly, and we'll get on to that, but yeah, the whole thing was very strange indeed.
I think it's put a bit of mistrust into what's now this summer's window. Do we trust the guys who are writing checks? That's kind of how it feels.
I actually look at that a bit more cynically. I think Brendan was actually trying to use his currency with the supporters to put pressure on the board in quite a public and nasty way. I am not Peter Lovell's biggest fan by any stretch of the imagination, but again, I find that it left a bad taste in the mouth. I thought he was doing things very publicly when there was possibly no need to do so. And as you're also pointing out, Harry, he got the guys he wanted previously, So he couldn't claim he wasn't being supported previously. The whole thing, like I said, was shambolic and, very unedifying.
I thought it was very much... I actually thought at the time, this is a guy who's nervous, and he absolutely wants to make sure that when the fans are going round to shoot someone for this going wrong, it's not going to be him. Which
I got that distinct impression,
Actually, when you look at the team, getting back to the point you made, Duncan, about man management and what it said about what the players were to do. See, if you look at the team that we played at home to AEK Athens, it was Gordon in goal, Lustig at right back, Hendry and Ayer were the two centre-halves, and Kieran Tierney, left-back. Scott Brown, James Forrest, Callum McGregor, Olivier Ncham, Tom Rogic, Odson Edward. We may have our issues with Lustig at that level as a right-back, and obviously Hendry. But
other than Hendry, that's our best team.
Yeah, Brown, Forrest, McGregor, Ncham, Rogic, Edward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Griffiths coming off the bench, Scott Sinclair being on the bench, and Simonovic being on the bench. You could have played Simonovic ahead of Jack Hendry.
Yes.
So it was, the summer before, again, getting back to Brendan taking and not taking bids, the summer before, Brendan had turned down £8 million for Jozo Simonovic. And said he didn't want to sell Simonovic because, again, we were in the Champions League qualifying without two quality centre-halves. So the summer before... So, there's a guy that...
There's a common theme here.
There's a guy the summer before that Brendan thought was worth more than £8 million Because if he didn't, you would have sold him for, you know, if you thought he was only worth 2 or 3 million quid, when a bid for 8 million comes in, you'd say, well, I'll take their, bite their hand off. The summer before, Brendan thought Simonovic was worth more than 8 million quid. And by this, by the following summer, i.e. last season, Brendan trusted Jack Hendry at centre half more than Simonovic.
The last 6 months of that season before that Simonovic bid, Simonovic was outstanding. He seems like a born again player, and I think turning that down would have been the right decision at the time. But in hindsight, looking now, you know, it's plagued with injuries and mistakes, but he seems to have came around again under Lennon. So.
Yeah. So we then went to Athens, and slightly different team in Athens. Craig Gordon and Gold, Lustig, Hendry and Simonovic were the centre half pairings. But again, it was McGregor, Brown and Cham, Rogic, Forrest, and this time it was Griffiths up front. Scott Sinkel was on the bench. Moussa Dembele was on the bench. Obviously, I think Dembele had one of his injuries, because he couldn't be bothered playing. But, you know, again,
you're terrible, Muriel.
But again, Sean, if you look at that was a decent team.
Yeah. I'm looking at Alexi just now. And we're actually, we pulled it back to 2-1. We didn't, you know, we weren't hammered out there. Sinclair obviously scored with 12 minutes to go. I don't know. I just got the impression at that point Brendan was willing to cut off his nose to spite his face in order to make a point to the board, possibly. Like you're saying about Simunovic, I don't know if you can compare that situation with Boyata. At that time, you know, who really rated Boyata that highly? You know, God, it's just and coming back also to the previous podcast that you have made about what was possibly transpiring at that time, it just raises more questions than answers about motivations, interests, and, you know, what exactly did Brendan want to achieve at that point, you know?
Yeah, because it was as we finished the transfer window and went into the September window, I'd heard various things, and that's when I went on the Buy Them In podcast and said, mm-hmm. you know, Brendan basically wanted to go.
And you get Kane for it.
Yeah, but this is the thing, Stephen. See, at that point, if you then look at the domestic performances, I was really, really concerned. If you look at the league table at the end of September, you know, because that was us out of the Champions League, at the end of September, we were in fifth place, 6 points behind Hearts. But we were in fifth place in the table, having played 7 games, won 4, drawn 1 and lost 2. So, you know, more or less, we'd only won 50% of our games at that point. Plus, the other really big thing is we were not really scoring goals. We just started to score. We'd scored 7 goals and conceded 4 at that point. We'd scored a goal a game. And my concern, Stephen, at that point of the season was, are we just going to meander along with a manager who doesn't want to be here until at some point he leaves in November, and by that point we'll be 10 points off the title? I mean, what were your thoughts when, by the end of September, you know, because that was the point, by the end of September we'd only scored 7 goals, we were not scoring goals.
Yeah. Who was that question aimed at? Sorry.
You, Stephen.
Me. I think the Hearts game we lost away was a very concerning. I think we lost to Kilmarnock as well away. It just, the players just seemed bereft of ideas, a bit lackluster. The manager just didn't have that spark that he'd had for the previous 2 seasons. It was almost like you're saying, it was as if, and that's when I started to believe that he didn't want to be there. You know, it looked like a guy who was just going through the motions. the players looked like they were going through the motions. And I'm trying to, I think it was possibly the St Johnstone game in the League Cup. Well, we beat them in the League Cup and got away with one at the very end. I think Scott Bain made a bit of a mistake. But then I think we played them a few days later, and just everything just seemed to, it was almost as if the players and the manager had sort of got together and just said, right, let's get to the end of the season and let's do our job and forget what's gone before, because we absolutely obliterated St Johnstone, and then we kind of went on this really good run, and I think Scott Brown was out of the team as well at the time, and that's when we really started to look like the team of the previous two seasons.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Duncan. I mean, I just talked about the end of September. We were in, after seven games, we'd scored seven goals. Mm-hmm. And then in October, and this
we scored 20 goals.
Yeah.
We scored 20 goals in four games.
Yeah, 6-0 against St Johnstone.
Yeah.
4-2 against Hibs. 3-0 against Hearts in the League Cup semi. And 5-0 against Dundee.
And then 5-0 against Hearts again.
And then 5-0 against Hearts, yep.
Aye.
So it was that. It was almost as if end of September, Brendan, and again, this was the stuff that I'd heard at the time, that there'd been a bit of a conversation with Brendan, Peter, and Dermot.
Yeah.
The conversation had been, right, okay, you can leave. We will not be difficult to deal with if somebody comes in, but while we are paying your wages, you absolutely put your heart and soul into this.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the alleged London summit that Peter and Brendan went down to. Dermot's down in London, and whether that happened or not, I don't know. I don't really care. But something happened, and you're right to go from being very lacklustre the first sort of six, seven, eight games of the season, and that game away at St Johnstone, I think that was a game that James Forrest got four goals in. He seemed to score four goals in about 20 minutes. And then that was, like I say, 6-0, and we battered Hibs, who at that time, for me, were playing the best football in the league. That Hibs team were a decent team, and then we gave Dundee and Hart, but it was like almost like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. We're Celtic, we've got a league to win here, we're out of Europe, we're out of Champions League, let's suck it up and crack on with this. And it was like a gear change, which is encouraging that you can do that, and we should be able to do that given the amount of players that we have and the value of our squad. So it was encouraging as we got towards sort of into the cold nights around about November and December time.
It's interesting a point you made there, Stephen, just now, when you said that Brown wasn't in the team during that spell. And it was, I can't remember what game it was, because obviously in Cham wished he'd got, you know, he's been out in the press this week as well, confirming that he wished he'd gone, that Celtic had taken the Porto, £14 million Porto offer last summer, because he's bored in Scotland, because he's better than everybody else.
Was this the deal that was offered about 2 weeks after he'd signed a new deal himself? Because, you know, he was so bored.
But the thing that struck me last season, there was a game I was watching during the spell when we suddenly started playing really decent football, where Browning and Cham both played, and we suddenly started to be slow and ponderous with sideways passes. And I realised that Brendan's first season, we played really dynamic football. And actually, everybody seems to forget, there was long periods in the second season where it was, I mean, we ended up this season, we scored more goals than we did in Brendan's second season. And there was long periods in the second season where I thought it was a bit pedestrian at times. And I can't remember what game it was, but I suddenly thought, people are blaming it on Brown. I don't know if it was specifically Brown. I just wonder if the issue has always been when Cham and Brown are both in the same team. If you took one of them out, the team played attacking football. The problem was when you played both of them at the same time. I don't know what you think of that, Steve. Because you might not mention Brown.
I don't think McGregor's been as influential since Brown went back in the team. I think McGregor came of age, and I think Rodgick and Christie had their best spells in the team when it was those three. They're a bit quicker, a bit, you know, more dynamic, all three of them. And I think he's a player that needs to be slowly faded out. I think he's got his uses in certain games, but I think with the two Rangers games at Ibrox, I think he was shown up pretty badly this season. So I think he's been a great servant, but I definitely think I think what worries me a bit, and I know I'm kind of jumping slightly forward, but the, kind of worried me when Lennon came out and said they wanted to build a team around Scott Brown. I think the team needs a bit more dynamism than what Brown now offers. He used to be that player. I don't think he's that player anymore.
But then it could just be that, you know, Brown is the, he has quite a leader within the dressing room and captain, so it could well be that Lennon's just wanting to make sure that the guy who's exceptionally influential on the dressing room buys into him. You know, could be as simple as that.
Possibly.
So, Sean, yeah, much of the talk at the beginning of the season was about achieving a treble-treble, and the first chance of that obviously comes in the League Cup. We had beaten Hearts 3-0 comfortably 3-0 at
Murrayfield.
There was the whole debacle about playing two games at Hampden and then playing at Murrayfield and all that nonsense that went on. and then we got Aberdeen in the final and we beat them 1-0. So were you pretty pleased at that point with the domestic position when we picked up the first trophy?
I was, but just to echo a point I think Stephen made there, at the very start of the season, I was starting to get a little bit worried. And I agree with the synopsis that, you know, the transfer window shut, Bryn was still there, the vast majority of the squad were still there. And whatever happened behind the scenes, everybody decided to say, right, you know, look, we've still got a job to do here. And thankfully they rolled up their sleeves and they started turning in some, I would actually argue, some of the best performances of the season. We're in that stage of the season. I mean, that 6-0 game at St Johnstone was just electrifying. It was really, really good football to watch. Really good goals were scored. The game at Murrayfield was quite similar as well. We really put hearts to the sword in that game. Aberdeen.
I'll just quickly interject. It's quite funny that you'd mentioned in Cham earlier. In Cham went off. We were pretty ponderous in that first half, and I remember thinking at the time, why are we taking in Cham off for Christie? And the whole game changed. So shows how much I knew.
But I think for me, when that was the real, that was a pivotal. We should have given Ryan Christie that trophy, because that was a turning point for me in that game. For a turning point for Ryan Christie's season and he's probably his career at Celtic, because he could easily have slipped out the door, but he came on and he was the reason we went on and dominated that game. And then of course we went on and got the winner in the cup final as well. And I think that was a massive, massive point in his season and his Celtic career.
He really took on a great mantle in the team at that point. But like I said as well, I think as you guys were alluding to, he also started connecting with really influential members of the team in the team at that point, particularly McGregor and Rogic, whose performances, you know, also were very high at that point, and I don't think reached the heights throughout the rest of the season from that point either. With regards to the treble, I expected the game against Aberdeen to be a right slog, because, well, games against Aberdeen are always a slog these days. They are really roll-up-your-sleeves, blood-and-snotters type games, aren't they? And I was just glad to get through it, quite frankly. If memory serves, it was Boyata got a bad injury. It was Mackay Stephen got an awful injury in that game as well.
That's right.
It was stomach churning, actually. As soon as it happened, I just went, bloody hell, you know, that good, you know. And they were down for ages as well, weren't they? You know. But coming back to the original point, did I think the treble was on? To an extent, but to be honest, Harry, the treble was never on the list of my priorities. I still maintain it's league titles matter more than anything, you know. Scottish Cups and League Cups are a bonus to me. I think even the most broad-minded Celtic fan really just wants 10 in a row, don't they? You know? League Cup, God, it sounds very blasé, maybe even arrogant. I could take or leave it. And I was very happy to take it at that point.
So then, during that period when our form was getting better, Duncan, we had the Europa League campaign, which I found the Europa League campaign quite a funny one, actually. I mean,
but funny as well, yeah. But, funny, peculiar.
Yeah, but and I mean, one of the things that gets me is, I genuinely think, you know, you hear, you know, I think when we did the podcast last year with Peter Lawwell, that Peter had said that our target is to get qualified for the Champions League group stages 3 out of 4 seasons. I mean, I personally, I think our target should be slightly different. If we're aiming for 3 out of 4 seasons, we do X. I think 3 out of 4 seasons, we should be aiming to be playing European football after Christmas, whether that's within the Europa League or whether that's in the Champions League. That should be where we are. And I think sometimes we've fallen into the trap of the English of looking in the Europa League as a lesser tournament, when actually with the level of money involved in European football at the top 5 league levels, Europa League's probably our level. So we had the Europa League campaign. We ended up getting Rosenborg again.
Of course we did.
Because they're one of our pet teams. And there was Rosenborg, and then there was the two Red Bull teams. If you go on Wikipedia and look up the two Red Bull teams, there is no way that they should be allowed to play in the same same European competition as each other. There is too much of an interlink between them. But we had, if I go through the Europa League results to refresh your memory, we beat Rosenborg at home 1-0. We lost to Salzburg away 3-1. We lost to Leipzig away 2-0. We beat Leipzig at home 2-1. We beat Rosenborg away 1-0. And then we had Salzburg at home where we get beat. But it did mean that we got European football after Christmas. So what did you make of the Europa League campaign?
I agree with you in terms of where we are. If we can make a Champions League, great, and then finish third in the Champions League and then parachute into the Europa, I think that's where we are. And maybe we could get through to maybe even the quarterfinals. That's probably where we are just now. That's our limit. But this particular Europa League campaign, it was weird. And I think the reason it's probably weird because of the circumstances of the last game against Salzburg, where we lost, and then I'd almost forgot Rosenborg. I forget Rosenborg were playing Leipzig that night or something, I think. And obviously they scored a late goal, which meant that we went through. And I've never been in a situation like that live at a Celtic game where we've lost a game but somebody else has won and we've gone through. So it was a weird situation. But I thought both those Red Bull teams were very, very good teams. I mean, if you actually look where Leipzig finished, I think they finished third in that Bundesliga this year.
And a cup final.
And they are. I mean, that's a quality side. But Salzburg, I mean, for an Austrian team, they were both very good. Now, I agree with you on the ownership, and I actually think they share a director of football, which is just absolute madness. But it was a very surreal campaign and almost scratching of heads that, not quite sure how we get out of that one, but we're through to knockout football, which was pretty cool. And I think we drew Valencia, which was obviously disappointing. But it was a strange campaign, and it feels weird. And I think that was the first experience, I think, of the disco lights at Celtic Park as well, those
That's
nights.
Great,
and, and one of my favourite games of the season actually was the one over Leipzig. We beat them 2-1 that night.
For me, that's a performance of the season.
Aye, absolutely. I mean, it was a great game. We got off to a fly. I remember, I think Tierney scored quite early, scored in about 10 minutes or something.
11, you were 1 minute.
All oh, right, there you go. And then later in the game, Leipzig scored again from memory, about 10 minutes to go. We were right up the park and scored, because they thought, oh, well, that's us blown it. Leipzig scored late on, maybe 10 minutes to go, and then we went up the pitch and Edouard scored right from the kickoff. That was my favourite game of the season.
That's the kind of goal you score in FIFA on the PlayStation. You just kick off, pass it 3 or 4 times, and then tap it in at the back post. That was a beauty.
But getting back to the the teams the team that was available and the teams that went out and played, comparing the AEK Athens game where Brendan was really being on a downer. I mean, against Leipzig, it was Gordon, Lustig, Tierney, Boyata, Benkovic, Sinclair, Christie, Rogic, McGregor, Forrest, Edward. So, in many ways, I mean, okay, the two centre-halves were different, and if you look at it, Benkovic is a... What was it, Leicester paid for Benkovic? I remember 13. Making... I think this was the game when I talked about us having a £40 million defence, that Benkovic cost 13, we turned down a bid for Boyata of 10, so there was 23. You know, we can see this summer that our valuation of Tierney's 25 million, so there's 48, and a million or two for Lustig, chucking that in, and you were at a £50 million defence. You know, that actually and then on the bench, we had Ayer as a centre-half on the bench. So, and I know that the coaches of the teams that we were playing against were commenting that with Simonovic, Boyata, Benkovic and Ayer, with those four, we probably... The teams we were playing against believed that we had the four best... In those four, we had cumulatively the best centre-halves group of four teams. Even your dog agrees. We had the four best centre-half teams in the group. So, that performance against Leipzig was... Actually, do you know what it was? I don't know if you agree, Sean. See, after the first treble winning season... My expectation in Brendan's second season was that he would pretty much ditch the League Cup, and that we would really go for moving to a different level under Brendan and performing in European football. And that was the type of performance I expected Brendan to deliver in European football for us after the first treble season. And it never really happened.
Did you not think, Harry, this is when Brendan's halo started to slip somewhat? And we got warnings from Liverpool fans about European performances starting to come home to roost. The biggest disappointment I've had with Ben Rodgers ever since he arrived, whenever he arrived at Celtic, were European performances. And it's unfortunate because when we've been good in Europe under Brendan, like the Leipzig game, we've been really good. You know, we've went toe-to-toe against really good sides like Leipzig.
And even the Bayern at home, we lost 2-1. I thought we were excellent on that night as well.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate that night. You know, Bayern were Bayern, eh?
Yeah.
They were just ruthless. But I think you need to juxtapose that Leipzig game at home with, well, look at the previous game against Leipzig away. We were appalling. We were naive, and we never really showed up for the game, did we? You know? And this is where Brendan's principles constantly met a fierce adversary, easy for me to say, opponent, let's change that. In reality, he simply couldn't translate whatever tactical plan he wanted to enact efficiently and effectively in Europe that he wanted to, you know. And there's times where I went into some games just pleading with him, just park the bus, mate, just park the bus, you know, just I can live with that. it's Europe, it's fine, you know. But it's... he really let himself down, didn't he?
You know? Again, something you mentioned there about my expectations. Again, in season one under Brendan in European football, when people were talking about should you not send the team out to park the bus, Brendan's attitude was, I remember Brendan sort of making the general point of, well, the players are never going to learn if all you do when you play European football is say, go and play differently, play defensive football. and they need to learn to be confident in possession and to pass the ball. And to some extent, I thought, right, okay, you've got a bit of a point that they need to learn. But
that's very idealistic as well. I mean, I was at that Paris Saint-Germain game at home where they passed us off the park, you know, and it was embarrassing at times. And I remember thinking, why did we go into the game so wide-eyed? Why didn't we take a far more cynical approach to that game? And yes, you know, I get the point. Well, how do we improve as a team? How do we enact our tactics and tactical plan if we're not willing to test them against the best? Well, you know, by the same token, you've got to wake up to reality sometimes as well, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, surely that, again, the sort of counter to Brendan's point is, well, surely one of the things about a team that can develop and change is a team that can play on the front foot and bang in six goals against St Johnstone, but has the tactical wherewithal and positional sense and football knowledge to be able to, the following, you know, 4 days later, go and play a team who's better than them in European football, stop that team exploiting space, you know, play the way that SPFL teams play against us at times.
Yeah, and counterintuitively, that also demonstrates how good and tactically aware your team is by being able to shift gears and, you know, shift mindsets like that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So if we move, because I'm going to do a sort of Brendan obituary in a minute.
I was going to quickly say, in regard to never being in that situation when we lost to Salzburg but still went through, I was in Milan in the San Siro. We lost 1-0 to Milan, but Benfica beat Shakhtar 2-1 away. So when that result came through, although we had lost, we went through on the night to the last 16 under Stratton. So that was a weird one that night as well. You didn't know how to celebrate, but we're through. But, you know,
I think it was also the fact that Rosenborg scored, oh God, I think it was in
the 94th minute.
Injury time, wasn't it? Yeah, it was really, really weird. So, yeah, that just added to the whole peculiarity of the night, didn't it? And I remember actually just thinking, this is just laughable. It's just really weird and funny, actually.
I think it was funny because Rangers went out earlier that night.
So Duncan, back on the domestic football, we went into December, top of the league, played 13 games. We had a plus 24 goal difference. We were on 29 points. We were, you know, people were talking about Kilmarnock having a challenge for the title because they were only a point behind us, but they were two games in hand. So we went into December, and things started well in December with, well, it was okay. We drew with Motherwell, but we thumped Kilmarnock, who were close to us, 5-1. But then we had, it was a real mixed bag, but then that's partly because 8 domestic games. I know one of them was a League Cup final, but 9 games in total in December. Well, I don't know what it is about Scottish football as to why, you know, December, which is the foulest month of the year in Scotland in terms of just shite weather. It can be a bit icy, it can be a bit snowy, it can be a bit sleety, it can be a bit rainy, but you just know it's going to be crap. It's not going to be sunny. And they cram nine games into that. And we then went to Easter Road and lost 2-0. Then we had that incredible game up at Pittodrie on Boxing Day. I don't know why we seem to have a lot of Boxing Day games at Aberdeen, where, you know, we were in front, you know, we were 2-up, and then it was, we went 1-up, and then 1-each, and then 2-1, and then 2-each, and then 3-2, and then 4-2, and then 4-3. Odds and Edward changed that game, and gets back to the point you made a minute ago about Brendan chucking Mikey Johnson under the bus, that the guy who changed the game in the Aberdeen game was Odds and Edward coming on as a sub. And then we go to Ibrox, And you three guys will need to talk about Ibrox, because unfortunately I didn't really, I was travelling down, my gran passed away in Hogmanay, and she was 99, I was travelling down to go and see her for the last time, so I listened to it on the radio and it sounded an inept performance, but Duncan and you guys, you can talk about it a bit more. So tell me about December and tell me about that game.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, December was very good. Again, we were scoring a lot of goals. We weren't conceding many up until the Aberdeen game. I say we battered Kilmarnock. And then I don't go to many away games, but I went to Easter Road. We got beat 2-0. And we just had such a crazy team that day. Even I seen the team, if I could have got a bet on, I'd have bet on Hibs. Not that we bet against Celtic, but we were never going to win that game. But yeah, we a couple of good home wins, and the Aberdeen game was huge. I think that was the Boxing Day game, I think. So everybody was watching that in good fettle. But yeah, but the Rangers game, much like the Rangers game later in the season, we just seemed to go with the wrong team. I mean, it was just the wrong team. And to go with Mikey Johnson, who for me used words hung out to dry, and I think for Brendan Rodgers to do it, and then also for Neil Lennon to do it later in the season, was really surprising. So they obviously see something in training. But that game, because it looked like we were really on our way in terms of we'd stretched our legs with a poor start to the season. We started to score a lot of goals. We're coming into the Christmas period, that Aberdeen game, and I thought if we go and beat Rangers, the league's effectively done. I think they're, I know we would have only been a few points ahead, but the game at Ibrox, I mean, I wasn't there. I don't go. I've never been. I'll never go to Ibrox. I've never been at a game there. But we were absolutely rotten. I would say probably the worst domestic performance from Brendan Rodgers in his time at Celtic.
What do you guys think of that?
I completely concur. I remember watching that game. Well, actually, let me put it this way. Rangers supporting guys I know, I spoke to after that game, said that Celtic played right into Rangers' hands. It was completely mystifying. Nobody understood why he played Mikey Johnson up front. But even then, he played Callum McGregor at left back. It was perverse. And even then, Cal McGregor was still Celtic's best player that day. You know? And arguably, we could have actually had a one-each draw. We could have actually got away with that, with a point. And I can't remember, I think it was Incham or Edward.
Incham, right to the death.
Yeah. And I think it was a good save from McGregor. But it was just appalling. It was just rubbish. And I remember just thinking, what is going on here? Why did he send out that team to play in that way? I completely didn't understand McGregor left wing back or left back, whichever way you want to put it. It was just an awful decision in that.
It was quite funny how the fact that McGregor goes to left back and then Cham and Brown probably have the worst performance in a Celtic shirt ever. They were so bad on the day, it wasn't even funny.
The whole back line and Brown and Cham, when you needed steady guys, you know, on their best day, all had their worst day. They were nervous, they were jittery, they gave the ball away. Craig Gordon, you know, he pulled off some good saves, but that was after he also gave the ball away.
Yeah. I think that game was the nail in the Gordon's coffin as far as being the sort of goalkeeper to build from the back from, to be honest. He did make a few good saves, but they came from him giving the ball away in the first place.
Yeah, and you also noticed the quality of distribution now in games since then from Scott Bain taking over. Scott Bain is much more composed and measured, and he's much, much more accurate. Is he a better shot stopper than Craig Gordon? I don't know. But I agree with you, Stephen. That day, I remember just thinking, poor old Craig, I don't know how he can come back from this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the odd things about that game were playing McGregor at left back, playing Kieran Tierney was on the bench, and then is virtually not featured for the team since that game. Far the odd appearance here there. Odson Edwards had made the difference against Aberdeen. I mean, obviously I understand he's not fully fit, but surely you, particularly as this was the last game for a month, you might have started with Edwards. And then, you know, after 50, 60 minutes, take him off and bring Mikey Johnson on. But at least he'd, you know...
There was a lot of social media chat that Rodgers was making a point that the squad wasn't good enough. Obviously, Griffiths had dropped out with his personal problems. We only had one striker who wasn't fit on the bench. And he was kind of left with Mikey Johnson, who had done okay against Dundee a few weeks earlier. So it was a lot. I remember reading a lot of people thinking that Rodgers had sent that team out, you know, with a message to the board that, you know, I need backed here. You know, this team's not going to get over the line. Don't know how true it was, but it probably felt like it as well.
Again, in hindsight as well, Stephen, you know, and with events that have transpired in the past, would you now put it past Brendan to act so cynically in that fashion?
I think Brendan Rodgers only cares about one thing, and that's what Brendan Rodgers and how he's perceived, mm-hmm. you know. The fact that he didn't get looked at for the Arsenal gig and then was making excuses about, like we were talking about earlier, with the Athens game before a ball was kicked, it's almost as if he's the kind of guy that's happy to shift blame and take it away from himself. It's someone else's fault, you know. To go for the performance at Pittodrie, which was a really good performance. Scott Sinclair got a hat-trick. Edward was brilliant when he came off the bench to a few days later against Rangers and be so inept. It was frightening, to be honest.
And that also brought the gap to 2 points, didn't it?
No, we were level. We had a game in hand.
With a game in hand.
Oh, God, yeah, right enough.
Goal difference, so, we were plus 32, Rangers were plus 27, but the points were level. We were 42, they were 42. We scored... 46 goals. They'd scored 43, and we'd conceded 14. They'd conceded 16. Kilmarnock by this point were still in it. They were on 41 points, and Aberdeen were on 39. But we then Duncan went into the January. So we went into a January break level, but we made some signings in the January window, and I remember. I think in the September, I commented that January window would be a massive indicator that if Brendan definitely wasn't going to be staying, then I thought we would just be signing loan signings in the January window, because that would be an indication we didn't want to blow our money on a guy that was leaving. And we signed Ollie Buck on loan.
Tim Weir
on loan. We did sign Schved, but immediately for 1.8 million quid, but immediately loaned him back to Ukraine. We signed
Jeremy Toljan
on loan. We signed Bayou for 2 million quid. And then we signed the two Americans and immediately loaned them back. So in terms of sort of first team ready players, it was all attacking players, to be fair, that were sort of for the first team in terms of where, apart from Toljan, Bayou. But it seemed to galvanise the team. We really hit the ground running in January.
Yeah, I mean, we did. I mean, and you say there are all those loans, which, and I don't like loans. I only like a loan if it's a try before you buy. I'm not a big fan of the loan system, but you're right, because, and this for me, this is where we won the league, because we come back after the Dubai break and we go on and win, I think, 11 out of 12, I can't remember how much it was. We went on an absolute roll, and the fixtures were kind to us, actually, after the break. We had a couple of really, I think, not easy games, but we had sort of home games against teams at the bottom of the league that gave us a good start to the
because of the way the Scottish Cup draws, we got two draws at home. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 7 of our games straight after the break domestically were at home.
Yeah, and I think from memory, from about from after the break through to like the end of April or something, or April time, we won 11 out of 12 league games, and then a couple of cup games as well. So that, for me, I guess if you're going to say that the measurement is the results, then bringing in the likes of Buck and Tim Wee and these guys did give us a bit of a boost. Toljan for me was a massive disappointment, because I thought, and I guess it's naivety, just because he plays in the Bundesliga and just because he's worth 10 million quid, he's going to be a good player. But for me, he wasn't any better than Lustig. And it became very, very apparent that he's not somebody that we would be interested in buying beyond the end of his loan. But no, this is where our season, for me, league-wise, this is where we flexed our muscles and we just kicked on and we blew everybody away in the league, and we really started to stretch our legs, and it looked like we were always going to win.
I think what helped as well was immediately Rangers lost that first game back against Kilmarnock. I think it was their own player, Jordan Jones, the guy that signed it, won the game for Killie that night. And I think that just took a wee bit of pressure off, because it meant that, you know, we won our game in hand, and, you know, that it would put us something like 6 points ahead, you know. So, you know, I think that them losing immediately after beating us sort of set them back big time, and obviously put us in a really good, strong position.
And I think they might have even drawn their next one as well.
Possibly, I
can't remember. But yeah. I think
they drew a couple of games at home, if I'm not mistaken, as well as losing that game to Killie. But another important stat was that we didn't concede a goal until the end of February, and that was in a 4-1 win against Motherwell anyway. We looked really strong and galvanised, like you're saying, Duncan, at that point.
And that was the goal.
Really
that, was
together.
The, that, was,
yeah.
that was the goal it should never have been as well.
Yeah. Because Scott Bain was going for some sort of record or something, wasn't he? A clean sheet record at the point.
Aye, so.
But yeah, I mean.
But also, I think Ollie Burke was being utilised quite positively. And I think he was making a difference at that point. You know, okay, you know, he certainly wasn't. He was very raw. There were still a few things to iron out. But I thought his impact on the team was really positive at that point. And because of his pace, he was getting in behind defences. And even in that game against Hearts, we talk about the goal against Leipzig. The first goal against Hearts at the end of February was arguably the goal of the season, the breakaway goal. It was just really electrifying to watch. But I remember thinking, you know, I think we've got our act together here. I think we've steadied the ship. And of course, let's not forget the 17th of February when we beat Kilmarnock 1-0. I think arguably that was the day that really, you know, knocked the stuffing out of our opponents and Bruni's last minute winner.
Was that not Rogers' last game in charge?
Yeah.
Last away game.
Just have a look. It was his last domestic game in charge. No, sorry, no, you're right. We had the Motherwell game at home. It was his last away game. We had the Motherwell game at home. But by the Motherwell game at home on the Sunday, there was a bit of talk about the Leicester job on the Sunday, and by the Tuesday, Monday night, he was going. Was I recording the podcast with you on the Monday night, Sean?
Oh God, I can't remember what I did yesterday, Harry.
There was a crossover, because I remember listening to the podcast and I was listening to it after he'd gone, and you were talking about all the chat about the Leicester job, and that was it. He went on the Monday. It was a really frosty interview after the Motherwell game, and I remember it.
Was it not the Tuesday he went, because the game was on the Wednesday?
Yeah, it was the Monday night and it was the Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock on the Tuesday.
Do you remember the message I sent you on the Sunday afternoon on Twitter? It was a DM. I'd sent you a message saying Rogers to Leicester, winning interim till the end of the season.
See, the reason I was asked about who's recording the podcast with, because I was getting text messages from, you know,
I think it was Lackey, was it not?
Was it Lackey? Yeah, it was Lackey.
It was.
I was Lackey. One of the benefits of doing this podcast is I have become reasonably friendly with two or three journalists who are more Celtic orientated, if you put it that way, right? And they were sending me messages through the podcast that were increasingly saying, my colleagues down in Leicester are adamant that Brendan's taking that job. You know, which is the thing, actually, when there was a rumour in the last week about Kieran Tierney going to Arsenal, and somebody had seen him on a plane to Heathrow, And I thought that was interesting because when Brendan went to speak to Lester, he drove in the car because he didn't want anyone to spot him. If Kieran Tierney, you know, just in terms of, if Kieran Tierney ends up going to Napoli or Arsenal or whoever, if he goes at all, he will be going by a private jet or he'll be driving there. He will not be going sitting on a plane with everybody else down at Derry Heathrow, but that's by the by. By the time it got to the end of February, we were, you know, as you know, talked about, Sean, the Bruni goal at Rugby Park, we were 8 points clear, plus pretty much Rangers were playing the top five teams twice over. That was their remaining tactics. By the end of February. So we were 8 points clear at that point. And again, as you say, it was Airdrie 3-0 in the Cup. And then the St Mirren game, because as you talked about, Stephen, Gordon played against Rangers. Bain played against Airdrie. We didn't think anything of it because Bain was the Cup keeper. But then he retained his place for St Mirren at home, who we beat 4-0. Then we beat Hamilton 3-0. Then St Johnstone 2-0. Then we went away to St Johnstone and beat them 2-0. Then we beat Hibs at home 2-0. Then we thumped St Johnstone in the Cup 5-0. Then Bruni's last minute winner against Kilmarnock. Then we beat Motherwell 4-1 with the goal that shouldn't have been. And then that was it for Brendan. So Duncan, although there'd been talk about it, did you actually think he would leave before the end of the season?
No, I didn't. I mean, I was pretty sure that he would leave at the end of the season, but I just didn't. Maybe it was more denial. I didn't see him leaving, and certainly the manner in which he left. I mean, I was absolutely under the spell of Brendan. I'd been very lucky enough to spend some time with him up at Lennox Town, spent a lot of one-on-one time with him as well, and he was really good to me. And sort of the Rocks basketball team had us over to Celtic Park, and he was really good, and he spoke genuinely of a love and a passion for Celtic. And I knew that he wasn't there forever, but the manner in which he left was very, very hard to take. I mean, I don't think anybody thought for a second that Brendan Rodgers didn't have an ego. I mean, I think everybody knew that, and maybe that's part of the reason why he was so successful at Celtic, but I didn't think he'd leave before the end of the season, no. And I don't know, maybe I'm clutching at straws here. He thought he was leaving until the end of the season either. I think it was more circumstances. I feel like I'm sticking up for an ex here. But I think it was more the circumstances.
You probably haven't eaten your time.
Yeah. I'm going to have a lie down for this. My other half's a psychologist. Haven't you got on the couch in 20 minutes? But no, I don't think he thought he was leaving until the end of the season. I think it was more circumstances. It was accelerated from Leicester, that it just wasn't working for them with whoever it was that was at interim or who was the caretaker at the time. It wasn't working, and he was obviously thinking, well, this job's going to go, I need to go now, and well, obviously he went. So, but I mean, for me it's disappointing, but I think as well that I kind of take away from the success that he brought in his time at Celtic. I think just in my lifetime, domestically, unprecedented success that he brought, and I loved his time here. It could have been a wee bit better managed in terms of his exit, but that's what it is. And the king is dead, long live the king, and all of that. And nobody is bigger than this club. I think that's the bottom line. But yeah, it was a wee bit lacking in class how he exited, but so be it.
So Sean, mm-hmm. Lots of people online have used the term rat in relation to Brendan Rodgers and been very, very vitriolic, right? Now, I put it down to I'm with you, Duncan. So I don't know what you two, Sean and Stephen, are. I'm with you, Duncan. Brendan won us 7 trophies in a row, pretty much got us to virtually 8 in terms of the league. I don't know whether it's because I'd resigned myself in the previous August that he was going. So when he left, I'd always known he was going. Okay, I thought it was going to be 3 months later. And, you know, but I'd resigned myself to the fact that Brendan was bored being at Celtic and wanted to leave and wanted to go back to the English Premiership. I could see why Leicester, because Leicester's got money, it's got a stadium, and it's got a squad that's perfect for Brendan Rodgers. So, I'm not one for this rat and all that stuff. He's not Maurice Johnson. You know, Sean...
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you there, Harry. I accept and I agree with your initial premise that whenever Brendan came in, we had obviously let Ronnie Dyla go, and I felt really sorry for Ronnie. We're talking about people that were hung out to dry. Poor old Ronnie, I thought, was hung out to dry. That job was simply too big for that man, you know, and he still gave it his all. He still delivered two titles as well, may I ask. And to go from somebody who was untested, relatively unknown, to somebody with the calibre of Brendan Rodgers was really, really exciting. And I thought that Celtic were on the cusp of something really special. And initially, you know, for the first two seasons, it was exceptionally special, wasn't it? Particularly his first season, where you could tell the difference in quality and how good a coach Brendan Rodgers was, with the transformations of people like Stuart Armstrong and people like that. It is the manner in which Brendan Rodgers left is extremely disappointing and has really left him vilified in my eyes. I was talking to a few people at the launch of Celtic Minded recently, and he is now uttered by a lot of supporters in the same breath as Maurice Johnson. It's not what he did, it's how he did it, you know? He could have, you know, Jose Mourinho and Andy Gray, for Christ's sake, you know, neither of which you could say are in any way, shape, or form Celtic minded, right? You know, for argument's sake. Both said, why didn't he just wait till the end of the season? Why did he have to leave Len? Why did he have to leave at that point? Now, a lot of it's conjecture and speculation and all the rest of it, of course. But also, you know, the more you hear about how he left, you know, where he collected his belongings in the middle of the night. He also allegedly tried to take away more backroom staff with him down to Leicester. And also on the eve of a notoriously very difficult away season game against Hearts, who always pick up their game against us. Tynecastle is always intimidating. It's always a difficult, bruising game. And this wasn't at the start of the season or the end of the season. This was two-thirds into the season. You know, things could have went off track very easily at this point. And for Brendan to leave at that point in the season before that game was, in my eyes, unforgivable. I don't want to say he's tainted his success, but every time I look back at, you know, the Scottish Cup victory against Aberdeen and, you know, Rogic's last-minute winner and stuff like that, I just keep on thinking back to how he left, and I know I'm not the only one that feels like that. And then also, you know, other stuff that comes out in the wash with Brendan Rodgers, like the whole Danny McGrain story. Yeah, I think we're all familiar with that.
Yeah.
Becomes very weird and peculiar as well. So... Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And to a certain degree, I agree with it. But by the same token, the way he left could have had a catastrophic effect on our season. You know, there was still a lot of football to be played at that point. You know, we were not home and dry by any stretch of the imagination. And yeah, it's a pretty horrible state of affairs, if you ask me.
How many points were we ahead when he left?
Eight.
And we're in the semi-final of a cup. He's worked one cup in the bag. We're 8 points ahead with 10 games to go. We're in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup. I don't think that's leaving us. I think he's left. I agree with you. I mean, he hasn't. There's no argument can be put forward that he left in a good way. But I struggle to sign up that he left us really in the shit. I think the season was was ours to lose in terms of the league and indeed the cup.
So Stephen, there's myself and Duncan are prepared to forgive and forget. Sean obviously wants to tar and feather him. So there's the Belfast man for you.
You can take the man out of Belfast.
I don't know. I think I'm quite a weird Celtic fan, if I'm honest. I don't get too hung up and upset, because I think when I was younger, I'd seen all my heroes come and go. And I think I just now am at a stage where obviously you love the club, you love the top, and you want the guys in it every week to do their best, but they all come and go. It's just how they come and go is sort of sets one from another. I think I was the same as you. I'd had it in my head that he was off. I thought he would have been away earlier, but I think the travesty that happened with the Leicester owner meant that they were not going to get rid of Puel during that period. I think that would have stunk the place out, you know, sacking your manager when the owner's just been killed in a helicopter crash. So the minute Puel was sacked that Sunday morning, I remember seeing a headline about Lennon potentially getting in his interim at Leicester, and that's when I'd message yourself to say, I think it's the other way about. You know, I think it's Rodgers to Leicester and Neil Lennon to us, and I wasn't surprised that he took it. I think I resigned myself that he was definitely leaving. It was just a matter of when. I think if he'd seen out the season and left with the results that we ended up having, winning all three, I think he would have left a Celtic hero, and it's just all about timing, to be honest, and how he's perceived. But I think it's just modern football. I don't really buy into all this stuff. I see stuff now about, you know, if Kieran Tierney leaves, he's a rat or he's this, and I just don't buy into it at all. End of the day, it's a job to these guys, you know. I just don't see much loyalty in football anymore, and I don't get too hung up on it, to be honest. You know, I'd have liked to have seen him see out the season, but I wasn't surprised he left. I think the guy's a narcissist. I think he's an egomaniac, and I think he, the funny thing is, though, he could have been at the end of the season, they could have had the choice of three jobs. They could have had the choice of Leicester, Newcastle or Chelsea. Because I think with the Chelsea embargo, I think Rodgers would have been a perfect type of manager for them with the amount of talented youth players they've got, you know.
And so, getting back to your, this is a job for these people, I think the thing about football people is they live in a mindset of you don't know what's around the corner. No job could come, you know, it's like the you know, Tommy Burns being advised not to take the Celtic job when he was at Kilmarnock, because, you know, he was still young and wasn't ready for it, and Tommy Burns' attitude was, well, I might never ever get the opportunity again, so the opportunity's here and I need to take it. I mean, with Brendan Rodgers, I think it's Aesop's, I think it may be an Aesop fable about the scorpion and the frog. With you know, and the scorpion says to the frog, take me across a lake, and for anybody who doesn't know, and the frog says, well, you'll just kill me, and the scorpion said, well, that'd be daft, because, you know, if I stab you and kill you, then I'll be killing myself as well. And so he gets on, and halfway across the lake, the scorpion stabs the frog, and the frog in his dying breath said, why did you do it? And he said, because I'm a scorpion. and you know, why did Brendan Rodgers leave Celtic when he did?
Because he's a scorpion.
Because Brendan Rodgers is the most important person in Brendan Rodgers' life is Brendan Rodgers, and Brendan Rodgers thinks he deserves, I mean, from everything I know from people who've spoken to him, Brendan Rodgers thinks he deserves to be managing at the top of the English Premiership, and that Brendan Rodgers is the best manager out there, and that Brendan Rodgers deserves to be well remunerated for doing that. And I'm with you, Stephen. I think also
third person as well.
Yeah. I'm with you, Stephen. I think most football people are like that.
Yeah.
It's a very closeted environment, football. Yeah, and I don't get, you know, let me rephrase that. I completely understand. I'm aware of the mindset that you know, people are ambitious. People want to put themselves in what they consider to be the foremost environment that they want to display their talents. And Brendan definitely wanted to be at the Premier League at some point. I remember speaking to a lot of supporters, you know, at that point in the season, nobody thought for one second that Brendan would be Celtic manager for the 2019-2020 season. But I keep coming back to the time, and it was a complete what's the word I'm looking for? He screwed us basically when he left.
Well,
you know,
getting back to Stephen's point,
leave us in that situation was completely unforgivable. You know,
getting back to Stephen's point and the point that then sort of to counter my argument and Duncan's point. I believed that Brendan would be leaving in the summer. I remember St. Anthony, who unfortunately couldn't make tonight's podcast. I remember I remember one of those things where I was at an event with somebody, one of our mutual mates of St. Anthony and I, and St. Anthony's boy was there, and St. Anthony went away to do something, and his boy said, I'm planning to do this next season in relation to Brendan Rodgers, and he was going to write a blog for us about Brendan Rodgers and he's going for 9 season. And me and the other guy, at the same time, both as matter-of-factly said, but Brendan won't be here. And honestly, I felt really bad for the way we did it, because St. Anthony's boy was like, obviously St. Anthony hadn't passed on the gossip that we thought he'd have passed on to his boy. But then St. Anthony came over and his son said, Dad, they're saying Brendan's leaving. And he was very much in the mindset of, but he's not going to leave unless he gets a job. And I remember making the point, or commenting then, look, he'll leave in the summer because in the summer there is definitely going to be jobs available that would be suitable for Brendan Rodgers to take. So the counter, and to agree with you, Sean, is he could have waited to the summer because he knows a job would have come up in the summer. And he could have done that. And then the other side of it is how much...
And his stock would have arguably been higher as well, Harry.
Yeah, you know? And how much did he take advantage of another Irishman who supports Celtic, in charge of Celtic, knowing the way the Celtic fans are, to make his money out of selling his book and doing all that stuff, you know, to really, really... And, you know, we talked earlier in the podcast about the way he played the Celtic fans against the board in the summer when he wanted the board to spend more money, to really use his position amongst the support, knowing the way the support loved him, to then, at the, you know, to back your position, Sean, to at the drop of a hat, when the job come up, just walk out before the job's finished.
Let's go back to the start of the season when he was having his power struggle with the board, and he was basically investing in support. Look, trust me, guys. Yeah, I've got Celtic's best interests at heart here, not the board. I'm trying to make us a better team, not the board. That sort of chat. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would disagree with that sort of perception that was being generated by Rodgers at that time. So for him to then completely disappear under, you know, the dark of night, you know, scurry into Lennox Town, collect his belongings without even saying goodbye to anybody, that sort of stuff really stuck in the craw, you know. And you, look, I get it. You know, there's no such thing as loyalty in football anymore. Of course, you know, we all understand that. But that doesn't get away from the cynicism, the cynical nature that he used, A, to build up his power struggle against the board at that time, and then to completely throw it against the wall whenever he left. Yeah. That's my opinion.
Hey, put that voodoo doll down, Sean.
No.
And Brian, don't you speak to Nanny's son about Father Christmas and the Tooth Fairy, for goodness sake, will you?
Yeah, do you know, honestly, the look on his face. But it was one of those ones where, you know, that way that, because,
you know, but that, I got out of that head, Bob O'Leary, and where are you?
But you know that way, but at that point, I'd lived with the thought that, with the knowledge that Brendan was going to be leaving, that it was so obvious to me that Brendan was leaving, that when he then started talking about it, it was one of those things that it just came out of, well, of course he's not going to be here. Yeah.
I'll tell you something else as well. The day he left, in fact, when it started breaking, I think it started breaking around midday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, on a Tuesday, wasn't it?
Well,
actually, no, it was early morning. I remember. I was on route.
Well, I'll tell you why I remember it, because I was actually at a job interview and I was preparing to go in. And I started getting alerts on my phone, and one of them, you know, came from my brother and my mum, started texting me saying, what's going on here? Is Brendan Rodgers left Celtic? And I was thinking, you know, I got an interview in an hour. I can't even look at my phone. So I switched it off. And I was in this like sort of mess hall canteen area where I was waiting. I was preparing to go in. And they had Sky Sports News. And I had to go into the toilet for an hour just to escape any sort of attention that was going on around me. So that wasn't exactly the sort of atmosphere I wanted to go into my interview with, you know.
Alison McConnell and Stephen McGowan both tweeted at like 8:01 in the morning to say it was happening. And at the same time, I got a WhatsApp message, or I picked up a WhatsApp message from someone who listens to this podcast, actually, to say the Leicester interviewed Brendan Rodgers and Rafa Benitez. Benitez said that he couldn't go to Leicester until the end of the season. Brendan has said he could take the job right away, so Brendan's getting it, because we were both very similar in the interview.
Harry, can I ask, how prepared were the Celtic board for this?
Well,
not asking you, do you know?
I don't. I mean, you know, I knew they were leaving. We all knew they were leaving in the summer, so we knew they were leaving in the summer. I don't think they expected it to happen in February until, I think, round about the weekend. The very fact that they had Neil Lennon in situ that night makes you think that they at least knew about it 24 hours, 36 hours before.
Yeah.
That it was likely, probably from the weekend before.
I mean, if you listen to his interview after his final game, I mean, I would imagine he knew, and the board knew then, and it felt like the official announcement of him leaving came, and then within 3 or 4 hours, they announced that Lennon was coming in as a caretaker.
So, Stephen, what's your thoughts on Lennon as the caretaker?
Well, it seemed like the logical thing to do. That's why I messaged you about it, because I just weighed everything up. He's out of work. We're not going to employ somebody from now to the end of the season. We just need somebody to get us over the line that kind of probably knew the club. I remember Lobel speaking about saying that they'd a few names in mind, and I think Strachan may have been one of them. I don't know if that was true or not, but I just think that they just thought, you know, Lennon can walk in. He knows half the players at least. He knows, you know, what's required, and just get us over the line. So I wasn't surprised, to be honest. I thought it was the most logical. I think it was the right choice to make, to be honest. I don't think going out on a manager search and leaving John Kennedy in charge for a few games until we got the right guy in, I think we needed somebody with an instant impact. I think Lennon maybe brought that, a galvanising thing, because obviously him and Brown are pretty close, and anybody that didn't know Lennon, Brown would have sort of said, no, let's get behind this guy, you know. So it was no surprise to me. Anyway, it seemed a logical thing to do.
And you, Duncan, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, I would echo that there. I mean, it was an absolute no-brainer. I think the stars were aligned with Lenny being out of work and Brendan going so suddenly. It would have been almost illogical to do anything else. Now, that wasn't the time for starting to think about getting a brand new manager. And let's face it, Lenny wasn't and isn't a brand new manager. He's been around the club and a lot of the players for long enough. So, yeah, I mean, I think everybody, I know that it was set a split in terms of whether he should get the job on a full-time basis or not, but I didn't hear a single soul say that he shouldn't have been the interim manager till the end of the season. I think it was a pretty much a, as much as anything is with Celtic fans, it was a pretty unanimous vote of confidence for him as an interim.
So I think everybody agreed that that was the sort of right decision to make, was to get Neil Lennon in. The issue then started to be about, well, two things actually, getting back to it, this is one of the things. Ollie Burke has now gone down as a terrible signing, but it was a point you made, Sean, that I thought, and this is the difference, I thought Jozo Simonovic was a better player under Neil Lennon in the last season, in his last few games, when he suddenly looked like the player that, that had been in his first season, centre-half. And then the other thing that happened was the opposite with Ollie Burke, because I actually could see what Brendan saw in Ollie Burke when in the last, in his first few games, and that, okay, he was a bit raw, but he was a guy who was big, strong, physical, with pace. And I thought, right, okay, Brenda's looking at something that's a bit like Moussa Dembele. I'm not saying comparing them quality, but a Moussa Dembele type player here, strong, fast up front. Then Neil Lennon came in, and he went the opposite way to Simonovic. But the big thing under Neil Lennon, Sean, that we talked about before, was under Brendan Rodgers, we started the, after the January transfer window, we went 3-0, 4-0, 3-0, 2-0, 2-0, 2-0, 5-0, 1-0, 4-1. Then under Neil Lennon, we went 2-1, 2-0, 0-0, 1-0, 2-1, 2-0, 0-0, 3-0 against Aberdeen in the Cup, 0-0, 1-0. The sort of boost that we got after the January transfer window went down, and it wasn't just that we went back, we weren't scoring the goals like we'd done in the five or six games and we before that, but it was also that the performances were not great.
I'm going to preempt your point. Lenny, at that point, I think, was just concerned with grinding out the results, grinding out the points. And to a certain degree, I can understand that. He was between a rock and a hard place in terms of what he had walked into and the position the team he was in. Like I said, there's still a bit of football to be played. I don't necessarily agree that everything was... I'm not saying that the other lads are saying there was a shoe-in, but, you know, I still think that we still had to, you know, we still had a wee bit to get over the line, and Lenny was just concerned with getting us over the line. But I was at, for instance, the 0-0 game against Aberdeen, and it was turgid. It was awful. It was just so uninspiring. But Lenny would have probably just looked at it and said, right, okay, it's the point. We're a point further in our objective. And in that respect, we have five goalless draws all season. Three of them came in Lenny's tenure, you know. And they were awful, awful games, you know. We also had four defeats to nil. And again, Rangers 2-0 at Ibrox was certainly one of those, you know. We did what we had to do, didn't we? That's the bottom line at that point. And Lenny, you know, I think that's where his single-mindedness and his determinism came to the fore. I think he felt he did what he had to do, and he implemented a process in order to do that. Was it inspiring? Was it fluid? Was it wonderful to watch? Absolutely not. But he... Like I said, he felt he did what he had to do. And like, did we win the league? Yeah, of course we did. You know, but it wasn't beautiful to watch now, was it?
So, Stephen, give me a rundown. You know, probably the best.
And qualify my point. Would you still take eight in a row under new circumstances? Of course you would.
Oh, yeah? Absolutely.
So that's that. You know, sometimes the bottom line is everything, isn't it? So,
you know, so Stephen, to review Lennon's sort of period at the end there, when he took charge, you know, we were 8 points clear, but at the same time, Brendan was so revered amongst the squad that he leaves. You could at risk a possibility of the squad imploding. He did try to take the coaching staff with him. Lennon won the title. Won, more importantly, in terms of the unique element of history, won the cup. And the only sort of, you know, he beat Rangers. Okay, it was only 2-1 at Celtic Park, but actually at 1-0, you thought they were, you know, the way we were playing, we were going to go in and score 4 or 5. So the only sort of real downside in Lennon's period prior to the league was the performance at Ibrox, which was on a par with the performance at Ibrox in January, in December rather, under Brendan. So what's your thoughts on that Lennon tenure?
I was starting to think, you know, with the performances, that maybe he wasn't the guy to come in. And I don't know if he was maybe stuck between, you know, wanting to implement some things, you know, and how they play. Because there was, he brought in Johnny Hayes, and all of a sudden we were throwing crosses into the box, and there was nobody in there to sort of be on the end of them, because Edward's not that type of player. He was trying to cut out the sort of playing out from the back style. It was a wee bit more direct, because he'd mentioned that obviously in the first game, Scott Bain had created a mistake that caused a penalty, you know, by just faffing about at the back. So I think in hindsight it's maybe difficult to judge, you know, because you could tell he didn't want to, and he said it himself, he didn't want to change too much, but he didn't change enough, and I don't know if he was caught sort of halfway between, and it caused, you know, some lackluster performances. And I don't know if he'd put chips, coke and ketchup back on the menu. I thought, I don't know if that made any difference as well. You know, going back to the diet, the Ronnie Dyla comments about the diet and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know enough about, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and how players were thinking about him as a coach or a manager. He's quite an old style kind of manager, you know. He doesn't seem like a guy who gets too heavily involved in the analytical side, because he made a comment when he first came in about all the stuff that was there that wasn't there prior to him being at the club, and the setup behind the scenes, and that, just things like that kind of slightly worried me, that maybe Lennon's kind of been a wee bit left behind in regards to modern coaching. So I don't know. I think he probably got a solid 7 out of 10, you know, for getting his, you know, the results required, and then ultimately he ended up a point further ahead than for the day he took over. But there was definitely a mixed bag in there in regards to performances and results. And obviously I think the winning of the cup at the very end, you know, just took away, and how we won it, you know, so late on, and we, such a great finish. I think it just, anything that went before was just forgiven almost, because we'd got this unbelievable treble, you know, never be repeated type thing. So, you know, I think he'd done what he had to do. I think that's the best way you could describe it or sum it up, I suppose.
What did you think, Duncan, as an application for the job full time? What did you think of that period for Lennon?
I think it was a very difficult situation for him to come into, because he didn't know the stick or twist in terms of what he had, and he took a decision, rightly or wrongly, and I think probably rightly, to just continue with the Brendan way and the Brendan style, and add his tweaks to it. I mean, I think had we not had the implosion, if that's the right word for it, from the game at Ibrox, if we'd have got a win there, we'd have probably been talking about it as flawless, albeit not big wins and loads of goals, but just getting us there and getting us over the line and getting victories. That is the only thing that blotted his copybook, so to speak. But I think he did everything that he could. He came in, he had a great start. He was thrown in the deep end with that Hearts game, and then we get a last minute winner, and then we seem to get a last minute winner again up at Dundee, which probably helped him along the lines there. And he, as football does, it does these twisty. You had to go to Hibs in the Scottish Cup, and then we had Aberdeen as well. And I think he did everything that was asked of him. And I know that maybe me and you would disagree on this, Brian. I think he did enough to get the job. And I was actually happy that he got the job in the end. Given the cycle that we're in now in terms of league titles in a row, I think he's the right guy for that job. But yeah, I mean, I'd have given him a B+ for his 10, 12, 13 games, whatever it was that he came in for.
The one thing that really struck me during the time, I mean, you know, I've said in this podcast that in all, I can't, you know, I don't believe that in all of world football there's not a better candidate that we could have got in than Neil Lennon. My issue with it is we as a club and our management team at our club obviously didn't think Lennon was sufficiently worth keeping to keep him when he left last time, because it was a bit of a he decided to leave and the club were quite happy with that type decision. And he's not done anything since then for me to justify keeping it. On the other hand, the amount of rumours that were swirling around about what was going on behind the scenes in terms of the point you've just made, Stephen, about the sort of returning to a sort of 1980s culture of management type stuff. Now, there was one that was about the players going on a bender to Dublin, which I have spoken with someone inside Celtic Park who told me that, you know, I actually made a point of phoning me up to tell, you know, and it wasn't Peter Lawwell or anyone, I haven't spoken to him since the podcast last year, I don't think. It was somebody made a point of phoning me up to say, I'm aware of these rumours, I don't know where they're coming from, because they're just not true. And then there was another thing that people were circulating around about, as you say, Stephen, the sort of return to the Ronnie Dyla type diet, and I sent that message to someone in the coaching staff at Celtic and I got a two-word reply, which was absolute shite. So there does seem to be, I mean, much as I say, I don't want, you know, I didn't want Lennon to be appointed full-time. Now he's there, he's a Celtic manager, so I want him to succeed. Much as I wasn't a fan of that decision, there seems to have been a lot of just made-up shite online from people who have then, it's then been circulated as gospel about stuff that's going on that's not true.
I mean, I think I agree with that, and it's one of the things that I hate about, okay, give it a label and call it social media and fake news. Everybody can just make up whatever they want and say it's true. But what I am sure on is, and when Lennon left Celtic, I'm assuming Sean's not got him down as a rat as well for leaving. but when Lennon left, and I'll be honest with you, cards on the table, he demonstrated to me in his time certainly at Hibs that he was actually a much better coach than I thought he was. And I think, and I know it often doesn't work in life, but certainly in football, where when you go back to something or somebody second time round, it's never the same. So that the odds are maybe stacked against him. But I think he's a better coach. I think he's more mature. And like you say, I think a lot of the things that were thrown against him have proven to be, or not proven to be, but suggested that they were absolutely just made up and just garbage. Now, I don't know that, and you don't know that. The only people that know that were there. But I don't know, I think he's a better coach than when he left Celtic the last time. I think he's probably more mature as an individual. And anybody that's met Neil Lennon will know he's actually not the guy that you think he is. He's a very, very well-educated guy. He's very smart. He's not the hothead that you think he is. And I personally was pleased, a wee bit surprised at how it was announced and the way it was announced. But I was glad it was him, given where we are and given how important we are in this cycle of dominance, that if you're going to put somebody to get you over the line for the next 2 years, I'd put my faith in him.
Okay, so Stephen, very quickly, the sort of culmination of the season was the treble.
Yeah.
Just talk about the very briefly, because we've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 hours, so I don't want it to go on. So briefly, just the emotion of that day.
I think the way we won it, obviously we were losing, and then you're kind of thinking, oh, this is never going to happen, da-da-da. And then the goal, I think the way Edward finished that goal, it was unbelievable. And then to win it, it was just an unbelievable relief, joy. I wasn't at the game, I never got a ticket, which was annoying, to be honest, but I'd had a couple of weeks to get my head around it, so me and my boy just watched it and it was unbelievable. And I must admit, I had the wind taken out of my sails when they announced Lennon as manager about half an hour, 45 minutes later. So, because I didn't want him as the long term manager, I'd sort of been putting out there who I'd wanted. But you know, it was a mixed bag day. And then I think with the combination of the fuck up with the open top bus, I think it just sort of summed the whole thing up, to be honest. It was a great day, a great achievement, but you know, a couple of things that could have been avoided for another time. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad we've done it. So
Sean, overall, sum up the season that brought us the treble and eight in a row.
Like Stephen, I unfortunately didn't get a ticket for the cup final. I had to watch it on the world's shadiest broadband on the Stenaline ferry. And if I can just alert any listeners to this particular predicament, do not watch any game on the internet on the Stenaline on their broadband, because it is horrible. I thankfully just got in time for Edwards' winner, and that was it. It's been a weird season. I sort of compare it to the Seville season, where we didn't win anything, but I don't know a single supporter who would say that was a dreadful season. It was a weirdest season, that season, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Where this season is almost the flip side of it. We've done a treble, that, you know? Nobody has done this, and the chances of anybody doing it in the future, it's extremely slim. So you'd think we'd be, you know, on top of the world with regards to this, but just with all the controversy and different things that have happened this year, I've sort of taken away from that somewhat, you know, arguably rightly or wrongly. I think, yeah, you know, with regards to Lenny being appointed, the manner in which he was appointed, I think I said to you online, Harry, raised a lot of red flags in terms of any sort of recruitment process at Parkhead. But it was also a bit of an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer situation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How could you not appoint him? Because he's done everything we've asked him to do, really, hasn't he?
He has.
So, and we really can't ask any more than that. And in the most difficult situation, you know, circumstances in that respect. In terms of this season, I'm looking forward to this season. I think the signs we made have been quite positive. It's nice to see us sign defenders.
it's nice to see us getting some signings in before the first two Champions League qualifying games.
Yeah, we're almost preparing in advance, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is peculiar. I could get useless. The bottom line is this, you know, I think, yeah, as Stephen's suggesting there, you know, there's whenever we got Brendan Rodgers, really, it was a bit of an accident, wasn't it? You know, he was available at the right time, and we needed a manager at that time. Somebody as high profile as him. There was simply nobody of that caliber and that stature available in the same sort of way this time, was there?
No.
And as you're saying, you know, who else are we going to appoint? What, Davy Moyes?
Yeah, I was saying for Cocu for weeks and months the minute Marco Rose gets snapped up by Gladbach. So I was thinking outside the box, to be honest. So,
but we're talking about something bored here, Stephen. You know, for God's sake.
Yeah.
What Brendan did. What Brendan did was he injected some glamour.
Come back to your point, Harry, sorry. To interject there, I very much agree with your point as well, is that the board are absolutely scared stiffless of losing 10 in a row right now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, would Phil Cocu be a good appointment? Arguably, yes. You know, he's got a bit of pedigree there, hasn't he? He's a good tactician. He's been successful. Marco Rose would have been a very innovative appointment. But do the Celtic board want to be, here's that phrase again, hung out to dry on that appointment, losing, never mind 10 in a row, but 9 in a row? I really don't think so. So
the thing I find interesting, actually, is that with the appointment of Neil Lennon, I saw some people online saying, oh, that's the Celtic board giving up on 10 in a row, when actually, for me, it's the complete opposite. As you say, Sean, it was looking at it thinking, well, we know that Neil knows, can deliver a title, knows Glasgow, knows the club. I actually thought it was a conservative appointment. That was my, my irritation with it. But Duncan, you've been the most positive Lennon man in this podcast. And as I say, it's getting late, so we need to go. So I'll leave the final word to you. The season has just passed. We've won the treble. We'll do a pre-season preview, but are we going to get a quadruple treble?
I don't know, and I'll be honest with you, I don't care. All I want is that league. And in my opinion, Neil Lennon is the safest pair of hands to get us what I believe that the vast majority of Celtic fans want. I actually like what he's done in the summer, and actually maybe know about who he's signed, but about who he's moved on. Just there, I've just Googled a couple of things. He's moved on 20 players since the season finished. 20 players. He's moved on 20 players. I'm looking at a list now, and he's sent back De Vries, Izaguirre, Gamboa, Regan Henry, Dedrick Boyata, Philip Benkovic, Scott Allen, Yusuf Malumbo, Oliver Burke, Jeremy Tolyan, and there's a whole bunch of loans, most of which I don't really know. Reece Williamson, Ross McLaughlin, Wallace Duffy, Thomas Caffrey, Lewis Bell, Kieran Driver, PG Crossan, Christy Marku, and Martin Comper. God knows how they got rid of him. But that's 20 players. So that's 20 players off the payroll. And I like that. It was just getting too bloated a squad. I think we bring in another two or three players of quality. Absolutely a right back. But I genuinely, and I am a glass half full sort of guy anyway, but if we want to win this league next season and we want to win the season after, then Lennon's our man.
We'll put it this way. Signing centre-halves from Toulouse is a better bet than signing centre-halves from Oldham.
For sure.
With that, guys, because that is 6 minutes short of 2 hours for the season review, I think that's enough. I will say thanks very much.
Cheers.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Harry. Heel, heel.
Bye.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. That officially brings to an end season 13 of the world's longest running football fans podcast, and commence the end of it starts season 14. We will do the Celtic Underground Top 10, and if you're listening to this the podcast at this point, then email in podcasts, that's podcast STS podcasts, plural, at CelticUnderground.net. Email in your top 10 and your Samaras moment of the season. So if you can send all that in, we will do, before the season starts, the Celtic Underground top 10. And I promise we will also have last season's top 10, which I didn't do because life was too busy at the time for me to do. So we have two top 10s in 10. We're going to have a review of Tuesday night's game in the next podcast as well, which could well be our trickiest of the four, or certainly the next three, Champions League qualifiers. And if you're wondering why in the season end review we didn't discuss the sad passing of Stevie Chalmers or Bill McNeil, I think that those events had such magnitude in their own right that we did podcast at the time about those events, and I think... we were trying to just focus on the footballing side of things, and that was the reason for not mentioning those events, if you're wondering why. But anyway, enough of all that. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. We will do more in 2014, losing track of years. We'll do more in season 2019-20, our 14 season, than we did last season. We will have two top 10s coming up. We will have a review of the Sarajevo game, and hopefully that will be all on course to Celtic picking up the 9th title in a row and playing in some decent European ties. That was Duncan Smiley, Sean Huddleston and Stephen Ray, along with myself, Harry Brady. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.